Maybe they got pushed out of an airlock as a baby. Maybe they're the result of infanticide. Maybe they took an intergalactic megatruck road trip here with their friends. Whatever the reason, they're all here, and they're all just trying to survive the horrors of love. But before we begin, there's something you should know. I can tell you what happens in this story, but that's not what it's about. This is a story about skeletons and swords and ancient space stations. It's got planetary death and metaphysics and awful dinner parties. It's a murder mystery. It's a rom-com. It's a science fiction fantasy horror story. Above all, it's an intellectual escape room that shifts and morphs in hindsight. Our story starts with Gideon Nav.
We do bones, motherfucker!
Orphaned indentured servant of the isolated ninth house and swordswoman extraordinaire. And her childhood enemy, the similarly orphaned de facto leader of the ninth house and necromancer extraordinaire, the reverend daughter Harrowhar Canona Jessimus.
Death first to vultures and scavengers!
When the Emperor sends a summons for each house to send their best necromancers and cavaliers to take on a quest to join him in immortality, Harrowhark strikes a begrudging bargain with Gideon to have her pose as her cavalier in exchange for giving her eventual freedom from servitude. But upon arrival to the Emperor's crumbling manor on his ancestral planet, the two quickly realize that this endeavor is going to be nothing like they expected. There is no guidance on how they are meant to actually achieve immortality. The dynamics between the other necromancers and cavaliers are baffling to Gideon, who has never formally trained as a real cavalier nor interacted with this many people from outside her house before. What's more is that Harrowhark seems content to work solo, while Gideon languishes in their rooms. But the other thing is that their shuttles have been pushed into the ocean. Communication with the rest of the Empire is forbidden, and they've been informed that mysterious forces within the manor are trying to kill them. So, things could be going better. Throughout the first book, they'll encounter warrior librarians.
Inexplicable, Warden.
Teenagers who are awful by virtue of being teenagers.
Don't mention us, Magnus.
Sex jokes that are bad. Cannibalism that is worse. The devastating intersection of love, sacrifice, and grief. In the second book, some guy takes center stage as God.
I ate peanuts discreetly, the once.
While everyone else grapples with the consequences of having loved so fiercely that they devoured what was most precious to them. Sword-induced nausea. Space bees. By the third, we've taken a detour outside of the Empire for a wholesome slice-of-life peek into the domestic antics of the galaxy's most unexpected found family. Just kidding. This one's also about love and grief surpassing the boundaries of life and death. And in the fourth book in this trilogy? Well, it's not out yet, but presumably Barbie will answer the call to... And by go party, I mean, assuage the pain of 10,000 years of death and betrayal using the power of love and cool swords. But you knew what I meant, right? Oh, and don't ask about the four-book trilogy thing. Like everything else in this series, it's complicated.